Hello and welcome to Failing Boldly, a podcast that invites people to share stories about failure, resilience, and perseverance. I'm Christian Kuhn, author of the book Failing Boldly and pastor of Urban Village Church in Chicago. My guests for this week's podcast are Wendy Snyder and Bill Leff of WGN Radio in Chicago. Bill and Wendy have been radio mainstays in Chicago for several years and are currently on WGN from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. every day. They've also been kind enough to have me on their show every Ash Wednesday to promote our church's Ashes on the Street ministry. Wendy and Bill talk about how they got into radio, how they've survived in this competitive field, and they never fail to entertain with humor and honesty. And this conversation is no different. I hope you enjoy it. So I am here with Wendy Snyder and Bill Leff from WGN Radio. And so welcome to the two of you for being on my, welcome to the Failing Boldly podcast, and thank you for being on it.
Thank you, Christian.
Yeah.
I can't believe he asked us.
He was thinking failure, and who better to represent that than you and me? So thank you for that.
So I often ask my guests first to talk a little bit about how you got to be doing what you're doing. And so the both of you are on the radio from 10 to noon on WGN, and then do another hour online. And so I'm curious if you could just kind of tell me your stories, how you got to where you are now.
All right. First of all, I always like to talk. So if I could find a job where I could talk and get paid for it, I thought that would be for me. Loved music. And I went away to Illinois State, wanted to get involved in the radio program there. And you had to be an upperclassman to actually get a shift. And I am typically impatient. So I said, okay, I know what I want to do. I just have to find a way to get there quicker. So I came home from ISU, went to Triton College in River Grove. They had a radio station there. And I started doing a couple of weekly shifts there. And I knew this was what I wanted. And my program director there knew of an audition of a position that was opening up at the Loop radio station. So I put together this terrible demo tape because I didn't have much to work with. And I went in, had an interview, gave them my audition tape. Then the next thing was an on-air audition, which I was so nervous for. And my voice sounded really high. And I was like, here's Bob Seger on the Loop. And for some reason, I got the job. And that was 31 years ago. However, prior to that, I had tried getting smaller market jobs in DeKalb. They wouldn't hire me. Peoria, they wouldn't hire me. And I just kind of feel like that wasn't meant to be.
They knew that you were too big for those
markets. I don't know what it was, but I lucked out and never had to move away because then you would spend all your time trying to move back here.
Yeah.
So that's how I did.
Ditto.
That is so not true.
My story's the same. I was doing stand-up comedy. I was coming up on the 10-year mark, and my wife and I wanted to have kids, and I didn't want to travel and have kids at home and miss birthday parties and all kind of important moments of their life. So Wendy was working at the Loop. She was doing nights at the Loop. And I became friends with Danny Bonaducci, which even though I am friends with him, it still sounds strange to say that out loud. But Danny and I would do stand-up together, and okay. He always said, you should
be... Is that how you met, through stand-up?
Yeah, he was working at a club.
For those who don't know, Danny Partridge from...
Danny Partridge, yeah, right. That played by Danny Bonaducci. There was a club in the suburbs called the Funny Bone, and they paired us off. They said, I think you guys would get along, and we did. We hit it off, and then every time he came to Chicago, I would be his opening act, and he got hired at the Loop, and I was on his show one time, and he said, how are things going? And I go, things are great, never better, but my wife and I want to have kids, and I don't want to do stand-up and have kids. And he said, why don't you work for us? And I laughed, and I go, well, yeah, why don't I? And he said, no, Wendy's looking, they're looking for somebody to partner with Wendy. You'd be really good. And he told his bosses about it. And it just kind of took place very naturally and organically. And it worked right off the bat, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be great to be able to say then you kept climbing the radio ladder to where you are today with no potholes along the way. But in my limited knowledge of the radio world, I know that people often get... fired, they're not pulling in the ratings, or other reasons too. And so one of the things that I was reading about for the two of you, that you were on Q101, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And from what I was reading, that you were in the mornings, and that ratings were going steadily, and from what I was reading, it was about to explode. That's what I was reading anyway online, and then they said, we're going to bring in somebody else. So I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about what that experience was like, and how did that feel? How did you deal with it?
I will say this. It was a tough decision to leave the Loop. That's where we were put together. We were having a lot of fun there. But it was a radio station of kind of all big stars. And we were at night, and Bill was more hesitant to leave than I was. Yeah. I just thought, you know what? This is an opportunity. We should try it. And at first, it seemed kind of good. And soon thereafter, it wasn't like we were allowed to do our show. We had to play...
At 101, you mean?
Yeah. Okay. We had to play, what, like 10 songs an hour?
There was a lot of music. It's real prestigious in radio to be the morning show.
Right.
It's like being the cleanup hitter on a baseball team. If you're the morning show, that's the best. And my goal was never to be on a morning show. My goal was, I'm a night person. I liked being on at night. Afternoon would have been fine, or even middays, but mornings just seemed like such a hassle to wake up so early. And the culture was very different at Q101. It was a lot of teenagers who just wanted to hear music. And
not us.
Not us. We were kind of in their way. And at the very beginning, I hope you'll remember this as well, there was a music festival in Grant Park, and they introduced us, and we were used to being at the Loop. When they'd say our names, people just tended to clap and like to see us. And there at that music festival, they were booing us and telling us awful things.
Literally?
Yeah. They were not happy that we were going to work there. And then as time went on, you could feel it switch. Every month got a little easier and a little better. And, you know, we were starting to do a show that was more tailored toward Q101 as opposed to the Loop. And it was when we did get the axe, I thought we were doing some really good work there. We were making some headway.
We were definitely, in my opinion, on the cusp of giving them finally what they wanted at Q101, which was a successful morning show. They had gone through a bunch of different ones prior to us. And I just feel like it wasn't a good fit, and we weren't given the chance to grow.
Yeah. So when they tell you this, probably two different ways, at least two different ways that you could respond. One is to take it very personally and say, where did we go wrong? What did we do wrong? Or to blame it on the man and to say, they're totally in the wrong here. They don't know what they're doing. Which direction did you go? It was a little bit of both.
I got to say it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
Because, you know, radio jobs aren't permanent, and we know that. I didn't feel like we fit in, so I didn't feel like we ever were going to fit in over there. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, they didn't make much of an effort. The effort really came from us to try to blend in with the audience.
Okay.
There wasn't a lot of help on their behalf. There, you know, usually if you're doing something like creating a new morning show and wanting to restructure, you do an ad campaign, you do billboards.
A freaking t-shirt!
They didn't want to do any of that. And then they kept explaining to us they didn't have the budget, but then the guy who came in and replaced us had t-shirts day one and billboards day one and stuff. So, you know, you can be bitter about it, or you can say, what can we learn from this? And I chose to be bitter about it.
I was just going to say, I wonder where you're going. Because I wasn't bitter. I mean, it was a risk to take this job, and leaving the comfort of the Loop was a gamble. It really was.
A Bill Gamble.
No pun intended, who was our program director at the time. But you chalk it off to experience, and what did we learn from it? Maybe to be more selective in a job we take. That's really the only thing I can say.
Yeah.
Because I think we did our best.
And you were able to really feel at peace with that, saying we did our best, and not to take it personally, and not have, like, lay awake at night thinking, shit, what did I...
Right.
Why did we do that, or why didn't we do this, or whatever.
You just swore, by the way.
I know. Well, I wanted to open that up.
Let the record show that you were the one who swore. I would have bet Wendy, but it was your question. Good for you. Yeah, how did you deal with that? What did you figure out?
I didn't take it personally because I didn't feel it was the right mix.
Right.
I mean, so there's nothing that I believe there's nothing we could have done, honestly, that would have made it work there.
Right. You know, I kept looking at the progress, not just in ratings, but like when we would do appearances, all of a sudden, like we did this one at Great America, where there were hundreds and hundreds of teenage kids who came to see us. And I went, boy, when we started, I would never have guessed this could be a reality, that these kids wanted to come and see us, But it was really nice to see the way things were switching. They were starting to get us. We were playing into them. When we started, I couldn't have named you two alternative songs. If you said, here's $1,000, just tell me two alternative. I couldn't have done it. And by the end of it, I knew that stuff inside out. I still on my iPod now. I have all that alternative music. So
we kind of ended up liking it.
Yeah, it became a fun thing. I just felt, I don't know, like they pulled the plug a little too early maybe. But, you know, it's a business where that happens. Yeah. So.
Do you know that going into the radio business? Like, you know it's going to be tough. And so your skin is calloused or toughened just knowing, like, this is going to be hard.
I try to say that I have thick skin, but I don't, because we get texts every day from people saying terrible things that, you know, you take it with a grain of salt. If it's some kind of accurate criticism, like, you sound really ill-informed about this interview, then I read it and it's like, yeah, you know what, I could have worked harder. But some, you're stupid. Yeah. You know, then it's just like,
S-T-O-O-P-I-D.
Whatever.
S-T-O-O-P-I-D.
Yeah, right, right.
With backwards letters like the little rascals used to use.
Nothing's guaranteed in radio. I mean, really, even if you have a contract, management changes.
Sure.
Things happen. But it's good to do your best every day and go home knowing you did the best you can do. Some of that's out of your control then.
Yeah. How do ratings play into how you do your job? Because everybody, whether you're in sales, for people in the religious profession, you're worried about worship attendance, for example,
sure.
Or bringing in enough through the offering plate. And for folks in radio, obviously ratings are the thing.
Yeah.
How much attention do you pay to that? Because I would imagine you could get obsessed with it, mm-hmm. and that might affect what you do on the air.
Some companies and some stations put a lot more stock in it than others. We're very fortunate. The people we work for here at WGN realize there's going to be some ebbs and some flows, and it's based on a lot of different factors. The ratings for us have been very, very good. I'm thrilled with the direction the ratings have taken. I'm thrilled when we get to meet listeners and they kind of span a nice age range and various backgrounds. It's a nice mix of people who are listening. Again, these bosses don't say, hey, we want you to talk more about this and less about this. We've both had bosses that have done that. It's okay. Not been our case here.
Okay.
Although our ratings are pretty good at this point. So
yeah.
When you say, you know, the pressure's not on us because they're on the uptick,
right.
You know, I will say, and this is probably a terrible thing to say, again, we go in there every day and try to do our best show. And if the ratings aren't good, I don't lose sleep over it because there's really nothing we can do but our best. And we're on an upswing right now, so I'm thankful for that.
Yeah.
I always look, I mean, I know this is a strange comparison, but there have been so many shows. TV is more common than radio, but All in the Family's ratings, the first season that we're on, were abysmally low, and then it ended up being one of the best shows in the history of TV. So I always think with Wendy and I, maybe those first few listens might be interesting because people aren't exactly sure who she is and who I am. But I think once you give it two or three or four shots, you kind of figure out what we're doing. And maybe it's for you and maybe it's not. But I always say to people, you know, listen a little bit and see what you think. Don't don't judge it based on the first outing.
Bill, you mentioned you were in stand-up for 10 years.
Yeah.
What were the early days like for you when you'd be on stage? I'm imagining you're not playing to a full house right away. So either to an empty house or when people are coming at you or you're feeling like nothing I'm saying is landing.
I'll be honest with you. I have led an extremely charmed life professionally and privately. I really have. The loop that I entered was an all-star team. It was Wendy and Jonathan Brandmeier and Kevin Matthews and Danny Bonaducci and Stephen Gary. It was an all-star team. And all of a sudden, I didn't come up through the minor leagues. I was playing on an all-star team. With stand-up, I didn't do what most stand-ups did. I didn't do one-nighters at the beginning and have to travel to really small towns. I was really fortunate. I don't have any stage fright, so I wasn't afraid to go up in front of large audiences right away. I don't know the fit. I've talked with other guys that were stand-ups to talk about what that first 6 months or year was like. I didn't have that somehow. I was very, very lucky.
Yeah. Plus, he is like the funniest guy, honestly, I have ever met.
Thank you. Wendy smells nice. I don't know why, I don't know how I missed that chapter, but for some reason the first few jobs I had were actually pretty successful. I don't know why I was lucky.
Yeah. How often do you look at your own show and think about, that didn't go well, we could have done that better? Do you do that every day, or do you do it weekly, monthly?
I think if there's something that didn't go well, you know, sometimes we've had interviews that have fallen flat. And when they hang up or they leave the studio, we go, wow, that probably wasn't that great. What could we have done? But again, it's like you can't predict how something's going to go. What I love about what we do is I know that a lot of shows put a lot of work into their product. I'm not saying we don't put work into it, but we aren't as planned. We have some guests that are booked, and then we fill in the blanks that morning when we come in with topical things that have happened in the news. It's more winging it. Does that sound bad?
No,
I hope management doesn't listen to this. But
nobody listens to this. So.
But it makes it more fun for us. And I mean, you have improv in your background completely. You're great at it. You've kind of taught me how to do it. I've never had any formal training other than your tutelage.
Oh.
But it's fun to kind of let it build organically. And I think that's what our strong point is.
Yeah. I'm curious, both for you to answer this, and I don't know if you hear other stories too, but when you're in the car, do you not want to listen to the radio because you're just sick of it? And you listen to other shows that you may feel like are either competitors of yours or who have the same format to learn from those other folks?
I'm kind of a talk radio fan, so
okay.
I like to flip around the dial and see what's going on over there, usually going, oh, that's a stupid topic, or, oh, we could have done that better. So I do like to see what's out there. I honestly listen to talk radio more than I do. I should just be rocking out on the way home, stuck in traffic, and, you know, singing along to songs. That's what I should be doing, but I kind of like to see what the competition is up to.
Yeah, and you kind of joked about it a little bit, but are you more of a critic? When you hear other folks, and understandably, I think we all probably have that, whenever I go hear someone else preach, that was pretty good, but I think I probably could have done it a little bit better, or I would have...
Mm-hmm. I give credit where credit is due.
Okay.
If somebody's done a good job, I'm the first person to go, wow, they really handled that well. But if they suck at it, I'm, you know, I don't tell anybody about it except Bill.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if they don't do a good job, you know what? I try to learn from that.
Okay. How about you, Bill?
Talk radio a little bit, but for me, it's more the people who are on TV. And it spans from the people who are the late night hosts, you know, from Jimmy Kimmel to Jimmy Fallon to Stephen Colbert and everybody who's on after them. And then it's also the people who are doing the CNN type interviews, the CNBC, the Fox type interviews. I used to watch Tom Snyder every night. He was on after Johnny Carson. He had a show called The Tomorrow Show. And I think I learned more from him than anybody else, just because his guests were so varied. You know, he would have on people from show business or people from politics or people who did something important 50 years ago. And I loved how well-rounded he was. And that was the first guy I ever saw or heard that I just was in amazement at. And I would say, wow, what a great way to make a living, in that every day you have a couple people sitting next to you and you just get to be curious with them.
Mm-hmm.
That meant the world to me, the way he pulled that off.
Yeah. So I always ask my guests if they wouldn't mind sharing a failure story or two. And so if you can think of something either from being on the radio or other part of your life, I'll leave that open to you.
I will say, you know, being in radio...
Unless you've never failed, which in that case...
Well, this is going to be tough for me to come up with something. But I'll do... I don't know that it's necessarily a failure. You know, doing one shift and then that turns into two shifts and then ultimately you get a full-time job in radio. That's awesome. But sometimes you get a job that, even though it's on the radio dial, it may not be right up your alley. Sometimes a position comes up where, for instance, I was doing traffic at another radio station that was very conservative. It wasn't a failure, but my heart wasn't in it. However, I was still on the radio every day. I was still getting my name out there every day. And I just want to say that not every job is going to be perfect, but if you do follow your heart and your dream, that you will get that perfect job someday. you know, as long as it's in the same field. And, you know, I would go home and think a monkey could do my job. You know, I was reporting on the Edens. I don't even think I've been on the Edens. I don't even know which one is the Edens. But you want to keep your name out there every day. I guess it wasn't necessarily a failure, but, you know, I'd go home at night thinking about, boy, this kind of sucks.
Have you never said anything that you just wanted to grab that statement and pull it back?
I'm sure there are plenty. I can't think of any. I try to forget about them when that happens. I mean, we're off the cuff, so there are some times that maybe things don't come out right. I try to be really careful about it. I definitely don't swear on the radio, and I can't say that I don't swear in front of my kids. I'm pretty myself at home, but my best behavior when a microphone's in front of me.
Yeah, or said anything that would be considered insensitive or would upset a particular segment of the population.
I really work hard not to do that. Again, at home, I can't say the same thing. You know, I'm sometimes critical of my kids, as my mom was critical of me, but, you know, I like to think there's a lot of love behind it.
Yeah.
And I'm quick to apologize if I do say something wrong.
Okay. Bill, how about you?
All right, so this would be the absolute lowest point of my life. Twice, I've been unable to find a job doing anything. I just, you know, I would start out looking for a job in radio or TV and then kind of broaden the net a little bit to find a writing job. And then in both cases, I went months and then years where I just could not get a job. There was just nothing that I could do. And I would go online and I'd fill out 100 forms for various jobs and then nobody would respond.
What were like, anything? Or,
yeah.
Okay.
I mean, almost anything, because my skill set is extremely limited. Like, maybe the most narrow of anybody walking the planet. I could ask people questions all day and goof around with them and talk about anything you want, but I don't have any computer skills. The tech world baffles me. You know, I used to be a gambler, so I tried being a blackjack dealer at a riverboat. They said no, because you just want to win money, and we're the casino. We're not a gambler. So at some point, I had to take a job where I was kind of in the repossession business. I would have to call people who had high-risk auto loans and let them know that if they didn't pay by Wednesday, somebody was going to come and take their car. Except that I didn't want to take anybody's car because I like people, so I kept giving people more and more chances. And my bosses would say, "You can't do that. You have to explain to them that we're going to take their car." And I go, yeah. And then I'd just go back and go, "Can you pay by Wednesday?" And they'd go, "No." And I go, "All right, that's fine. We'll talk to you in a month or whatever." So I was really bad at that.
And was that just one of those moments like, I'll take anything? And so it sounds like probably right away, like you knew that this probably wasn't a good fit for you. But
it was the worst fit in the world. There's a guy who runs a restaurant who lives near me. And I came to him and I said, "John, you run a restaurant and you talk to people all day. Do you know anyone who's looking for anybody? I'll do almost anything, as long as it's semi-legal." And he goes, "Yeah, I do. I know a guy." And he set me up, which was so nice of him to do. The people at the agency hated me because they knew that I used to do radio and TV and stuff. And now I was among them, and they hated me, and I wasn't particularly fond of them. And every day before I'd go into work, I would leave early, and I would, because I knew I was, I literally sat in my car for 10 minutes going, "What's become of me? Look at what I'm doing. I'm telling people that we're going to steal their cars if they don't send us minimum amount of payment. I'm working with people that are just rude and obnoxious and actually take pleasure in the fact that they just scored because somebody can't make their payment." It was just the worst. And then in the back of my head, you know how in a video game, when you're playing a video game, it'll show you the Mario Brothers in the corner of the screen. You get to see their faces. Yeah. You know how many lives you have
right.
left. I'd see my wife's face and my daughter's face, and I'd go, "I got to keep doing this to provide for them." You know.
God, does that suck?
It was awful.
I'm sorry.
And can I tell you, the worst day was they went in and I met with them to see if I was right for the job. And it was
This is the repo job?
The repo job. And they were just, they weren't the nicest people. Because the guy said to me at one point, the guy who was the hirer, he goes, "Hey, we don't even give you a drug test here." And I go, "Oh, okay." I didn't know what that meant, but "Oh, okay." He goes, "Because over here, if you don't take drugs, I don't want you." that's funny. So I drove back 2 days later to tell him that I appreciated it, but I didn't think I was right for the job. And I went into his office and I said that. I go, I appreciate the offer, but I don't think." And he goes, "Come here." And we went outside the office. And they're located near O'Hare Airport. And he goes, I knew that you were going to say no. He goes, but I want to tell you. He goes, why don't we do this? Take the job for 6 months. And at the end of 6 months, if you don't like it, you can leave. No questions asked, like that. And I go, no, I appreciate it, but no. And he goes, nah, 6 months, it's a half a year, it's no big deal. And then I look up, and there's a billboard right there of Eric and Kathy smiling at me. And they're our biggest rivals, or they were before they got divorced. And I just said to myself, this is the worst moment of my life, is that I'm taking a job that I know I'm going to be bad at, and they don't like me, and I don't like them. And Eric and Kathy are looking up from the heavens, smiling down upon me as if to say, we won, we got you, we beat you. Does life get any worse than this?
Yeah.
It was the lowest moment of my life.
I hope it's okay to say this. We've talked a little bit that you don't necessarily have a faith background or anything that you fall back on.
Right.
For you, it sounded like it was the little heads of your family up in the corner. And so what helped you through that? Was it just feeling like my family is depending on me? I have to keep going.
They were all so supportive and saying, and I already knew this, but sometimes it takes somebody else to say it out loud. You took a high-risk job. Show business is one of the highest-risk jobs there is. For everybody who wants to do what Wendy and I do, I mean, the numbers don't even come. They don't make sense when you how many thousands of people want the jobs that you and I have? We just happen to have those. We were lucky.
Yeah.
We were so lucky. So at some point you go, oh, no, has my luck run out? Is there no more luck left? And I'd always think, they believe in me, so if they believe in me, I guess I should believe in me, too.
Yeah. Well, I brought it up. I said I wouldn't, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. So, but Wendy, for you, you're Catholic.
Yes.
How has your faith assisted you in moments like when you were the traffic reporter, or in moments where you're wondering, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? How has your faith helped you through that?
Born and bred Catholic. I have one son who's been confirmed a couple years ago, one who's going to be confirmed this year, so I will start going to church a little more regularly now. I'm probably not the best Catholic in the sense of going to church every day or every week, but I still say my prayers every night. I still feel like I have somebody watching over me, and part
not
of that,
Eric and Kathy.
No, and Scott definitely not. One of them's not going to be up there, so you know they can't watch over me. But I lost my dad when I was 10. I lost my mom a month after I got married, so we're going on 20 years now with that. And when your parents aren't there anymore, it's you need faith. You need faith to realize that you know there is maybe a grand scheme out there. So when things look crappy, and when I wasn't enjoying that job, perhaps I turned to a little more vodka than I should have. But you ultimately follow your heart, and you have faith, and you hope for the best. And so far, knock on whatever this is.
Hitting me in the head.
You know, it's all worked out. I mean, we both have been very fortunate.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah.
Just keep it going to see when that luck runs out.
Sounds good. Well, Wendy Snyder, Bill Leff, thank you so much.
Thanks, Christian.
For being on the podcast. Yeah,
congrats
absolutely.
On the book.
Yeah,
thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. That's this week's episode. Thanks again to Wendy Snyder and Bill Leff for speaking with me. You can listen to Wendy and Bill on weekdays on WGNRadio.com. It can also go there to listen to back episodes, too. Hope you'll subscribe to this podcast as my next conversation is with Terry Owens, the new general minister and president of the Disciples of Christ denomination. To learn more about my book and the ministry I'm a part of, you can go to ChristianKuhn.com. Thanks again for listening.